Hello there, and welcome to this week's episode of the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm one of your hosts, as usual, Hale, and with me today is Brandon, and we have a special guest as well, Nate, who's going to be exploring some of his research today with us and some of his specific interests in psychology. Nate is an undergraduate student doing his honors at Vancouver Island University and is currently doing a research project on mind wandering. And basically, well, I'm going to let him explain more to all of you about it because he can do it a million times better than me. That's why he's on the show. But basically, we're going to be looking at how we think and how our thoughts are associated with what we're actually doing in what we might call the real world, and how the two can be linked or flow apart from each other. Nate, how are you doing today? Maybe introduce yourself a little bit and give our audience a more apt description of what your research is.
Yeah, my research is related to mind wandering. Recently has become something that can be studied scientifically in the lab, which is pretty exciting just because it's this kind of, it's sort of something that your mind does when you're not looking. Like, it's not a goal-directed process, so it's typically not what is traditionally studied in psychology. But yeah, it's often looked at it as a negative thing. Like, it's something that distracts you from what you're supposed to be doing, like at work or something like that, or you're trying to listen to your friend and your mind's wandering off somewhere else. But recently it's this kind of attention in the field has shifted more towards how it can help us. So it's been recently, well, the evidence is kind of mixed on this, but it's in certain circumstances it's shown to be related to creativity, to planning for the future, in my case, it's been shown to be certain forms of mind wandering has been shown to be associated with positive emotion, whereas traditionally it's been shown to be associated with negative affect. So, and it kind of depends on how you define mind wandering. How it's typically defined is as task unrelated thoughts. So it's when you're thinking about something other than what you're currently doing. But there's a more, which is like a content-oriented definition. So it's like, what is the content of my mind? Is the content related to what I'm currently doing? But then there's this more recent way of understanding mind wandering, which is in terms of its dynamics, like how does it change through time? And that's kind of the area that I'm focused on. And so when we think about mind wandering in the task unrelated sense, that's associated with negative affects. So in other words, when your mind is wandering in that way, you tend to be in a worse mood than when it's not. But in terms of this, it's called freely moving thought. You tend to be in a better mood when you're doing freely moving thought than when you're not. And so that's kind of what I'm interested in. And specifically, I'm interested, I guess you could say, in the causal dynamics that underlie that. So when two things are associated, that doesn't say anything about how they're actually related. So a classic example is like when it rains, you see umbrellas out. And it's like, is the rain causing the umbrellas, or is the umbrellas causing the rain? Well, obviously it's the rain causing the umbrellas, but that's, we understand that causal mechanism. In the case of mind wandering, it's not, it's not super well understood. There's a lot of inconsistent findings in the literature.
So just for a task unrelated thought, like what would, like the word that comes to my mind immediately is like daydreaming. What would be some examples of task unrelated thought, or like just some classic, like, is it like if I'm supposed to be studying for my math test and instead I'm thinking about my favorite dinosaur or whatever, right? Like, is that just an example of task unrelated thought, or what people would normally kind of colloquially think of as like daydreaming?
Yeah, exactly. People tend to think of mind wandering colloquially, colloquially as daydreaming. Certainly if you are trying to study for your math test, but you're thinking about dinosaurs, insofar as dinosaurs are unrelated to your math test, that would be considered task unrelated thought. Yeah, that's right. And yeah, there's tons of examples, right? I think it's a pretty human phenomenon. Like we spend up to 50% of our waking life with our minds wandering. So I think we're all pretty familiar with that. But yeah, like rumination, insofar as we think of mind wandering as task unrelated thought, rumination would count as that. So like say you get into a fight with your significant other and the conversation lingers in your head afterwards, that would count as task unrelated thought, which can be beneficial, right? Like maybe you think about the argument and you're like, oh wow, like she was right or something, or like this, I could have thought of a compromise that we could have come to. So it can certainly, I mean, rumination can it's a hallmark of depression and stuff, so it can certainly have really negative outcomes, but that's something that I would actually be interested in getting into in the future in grad school, perhaps, but that's not something, I mean, my research touches on rumination a little bit, but I don't know a whole lot about that actually.
I was gonna say when you brought up this distinction between negative and positive emotions, the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of like mind wandering and negative emotions is rumination or something like that. And I was going to ask like what the difference is between like mind wandering and rumination, but it seems to be that like maybe rumination really is just kind of like a negatively experienced mind wandering in a certain way.
Yeah, that would be a good way to define it. I think that it depends certainly on whether you define mind wandering as task unrelated thought or freely moving thought. If you define it as task unrelated thought, rumination would count as an example. If you understand it as freely moving thought, rumination is actually the opposite. Because rumination, you're constantly going back to the same thing over and over again. That's like the definition of it. So freely moving, there's an interesting dispute in the literature about how to actually define mind wandering, and people in the freely moving thought camp, it's called the dynamic framework. They would say that rumination is like they would say their definition fits more with how we colloquially think of wandering. Like wandering is kind of like aimless, like you're freely moving, right? Rumination is the opposite of that. So yeah.
Can you, I was going to say, Albert, when you, it was interesting when you brought up the point that, you know, roughly 50% of our, thought time through our life, if you want to call it that, I made up my own phrase there. I don't know how the experts call it. I don't know if they use thought time, but I'm going to use it, is spent in some kind of mind wandering. It's not something that you, like, it seems like one of those sort of topics or areas of study that seem so kind of close to home and obvious to everyone that we kind of like skip over it up until recently, as you kind of said, like this hasn't really been a focus. This hasn't really been an interest of psychology up until relatively recently in the research. And it's almost like because everybody does it and it happens all the time, it's just not like, it's almost kind of like banal. But it's also interesting how you said, like, when you were talking about how actually, you know, it can be quite impactful on us. And obviously the topic of rumination has come up. And for me, the immediate thing that I thought about is ruminating on issues in a relationship or with a partner, which is actually the example that you brought up as well. And I think that's reflective of the fact of how, like, not that I consistently deal with those sorts of issues now these days, but I certainly have in the past, or certainly I can relate to, and I think most people can. And it shows how impactful certain kinds of mind wandering like rumination actually are on our lives and how much time and energy and focus it actually can kind of take up or even like eat up in our lives, or I guess could also be like really beneficial. It's in some ways, and I think you would say it's kind of like the dynamic side, it's that sort of like spinning or that turning of the screw on like a topic that we just kind of like cycle over and think about and go on and on and on about, that like sometimes actually leads to some deeper and more insightful thought, depending on the type of, you know, sort of like dynamic mind wandering that we're doing.
I think I've kind of at times become disenfranchised with academia because it's like this ivory tower where people are studying things that aren't really, I find, particularly relevant to my life. Like I mean, I've kind of started out in philosophy and I got a little bit disenfranchised, certainly with, I mean, I think this is more of a fair criticism of analytic philosophy, not to besmirch a whole
you can no no feel free to besmirch but... philosophy on the show. It's like totally fine.
I love philosophy, actually. There's a lot of interesting philosophical implications with different aspects of mind wandering. It's interesting, actually. This is a bit of a tangent, but I'm currently talking to different prospective thesis advisors, because to apply to grad school, people generally recommend that you meet your potential advisors ahead of time, because that can help your chances of getting in and stuff like that. And I was cautioned against emphasizing my interest in philosophy because it can make you seem unfocused. And oftentimes people in science are hostile towards philosophy. They're like, well, what do? They just talk all day and they don't do any experiments. But everybody that I talked to, everybody had an interest in philosophy, literally everybody that I talked to. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. But yeah, what I was going to say earlier is mind wandering, I feel like, is an example of a topic that is relevant to your, like, literally to your moment-to-moment experience, because it's kind of always happening. So that's partly why I'm excited about it. So
I'm interested to know, you kind of said earlier, when we brought up a couple times already, that up until recently, this wasn't really a topic that was significant in the literature. Like, it was kind of ignored. Is there any level of rundown, or like, what is the current, like, kind of scope of the literature? Like, are there any sort of like big people who are like focusing on this, or was there anyone who really like introduced this topic to the sort of like mainstream psychological field of psychology as of late?
Yeah, I'm not like an expert on the. It certainly would be something I would love to learn more about. I'm not an expert on the history of the mind wandering as a scientific topic. That it's a super interesting topic, and I also should clarify that when I say it's recently become a topic of scientific study, I think I kind of mean that more in the grand scheme of the history of psychology. It's basically been a topic that can be studied in the lab since like the 90s. So it's been a little.
That's pretty recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then prior to that, it was studied to a certain extent. I think partly why it took psychology a while to come around to. I think partly just because psychology tends to look at like quintessentially goal-directed cognitive processes. But I think also, I think because of like behaviorism and stuff like that, the idea of studying anything that relates to consciousness was like taboo. Like the joke is like, you can study consciousness, but only after you get tenure. Yeah, because it's this like, it's thought to be this like unscientific thing. So I think people have, I mean, now it's not like that anymore. Like, I mean, I'm not even in grad school and I'm studying something that relates to consciousness, but yeah. And I think that it just, in terms of like who put it on the map in the 90s, it was these, I think primarily, as I understand it, these two guys, they're both named Jonathan, actually, Jonathan Smallwood and Jonathan Schooler. They were actually both at UBC, which is my alma mater. UBC has kind of been this hotbed for mind wandering research, although things have changed there a little bit, unfortunately. Well, there's still a couple people there. But anyway, yeah, and actually what they did is, because it's funny, I'll talk to people like, how do you study mind wandering? Like, it's like this thing that you have to like catch. It's like lightning in a bottle. Like, how do you... Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I can understand where people are coming from, but then as soon as you tell them, they're like, oh, well, that makes sense. Basically, you just give somebody a really boring task, and then periodically you ask them where their mind was just prior to getting this probe. Like, so the classic task is called the SART. It stands for Sustained Attention to Response Task. And you just press a button every time you see a digit. And then you withhold your response, though, if you... see a specific digit, usually it's 3. So it's like you see like 1, 2, and you press the button every time you see that. But then when you see 3, you have to withhold the response. I think partly the reason why they use that task is failing to withhold your response is a behavioral indicator of mind wandering, because you're no longer focused on the task. So you're just doing this automatic response. And then in sometimes it's called experience sampling. Rather than see a digit, you'll see a question, and that question is like, were you thinking about something other than the task? And that would be task unrelated thought. And then there aren't a whole lot of studies that do this, and this is what I'm actually just about to start a study on this. You can just ask them, was your mind freely moving? Or in my case, the way that kind of things have changed is, it's not really an all or nothing thing. You could say, to what degree was your mind freely moving? I'm doing kind of two different types of studies. One's a more laboratory-based study, so it's like with much more experimental control, and I'm able to manipulate people's moods using like mood induction techniques, like showing particular video clips that are designed to like induce certain moods. And then I look to see how that affects people's minds and how they wander. So the idea is, I edited together a cat video, because apparently cat videos are extremely effective positive mood induction. I'm like, this is crazy. I can't believe I'm editing cat videos as part of a psychology study. The hypothesis is that people that are happy as a result of that, their minds will move more freely as a result. And also, maybe they'll engage in less task-unrelated thought as a result of that.
Something you just said that kind of piqued my interest was you talked about like degrees of mind wandering. Like initially, when I would think about it, I would kind of think about the example I used earlier for our listeners was like, okay, I'm supposed to be focusing on math, but instead I'm thinking about dinosaurs. Like, what would I guess like the degrees of like intensity or severity of mind wandering actually look like? Like, how could you be more or less like wandered or off track or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's funny. I guess at the end of the day, it's sort of up to the person to know that. But the way for me, I look at it is, it depends on whether you're talking about task unrelated thought or freely moving thought. If you're talking about task unrelated thought, if you're right in the middle of the scale, so it's like, it's a Likert scale. It's like 1 to 7. So if you're at a 1, that means you're like super focused on the task. And then if you're at a 7, you're like completely out to lunch. Like you have like basically forgotten that you're even doing a task. And you're like, it's like everybody has that experience, right? You're reading, for example. I think reading is a good example. And then you're like, holy cow, I've been staring off at the ceiling for the last 30 seconds of what the heck happened. But then I think in the middle is that's how I like to think about it. You divided your attention equally between your mind wandering and the task, which I think we tend to be good at. Maybe not so much for reading, but for simple tasks like driving, for example. Like it's quite easy, I think, to be focused on driving and with your mind wandering at the same time. So yeah. And then freely moving thought, you could think of degrees of freedom with regard to your thought process. So this hasn't really been studied that much, but I was thinking like it would be interesting to bring in people that are like having like a manic episode, because my thinking is, or the people I think with mania, and this is an area I actually don't know much about, but my guess is that people with mania, I think their thoughts tend to race, and it would be interesting to see if they have more freedom of movement. And you can test that by looking actually at like the semantic distance between thoughts. And I think you can use like an AI algorithm or something like that to quantify.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because like, you know, like free association, you think like, oh, that thought leads to that thought leads to that thought. It'd be interesting to see if people who are in a manic episode do that more.
Yeah, like stylometrically analyzing a free association. That'd be interesting.
So when you say the semantic difference between thoughts, you mean like, or like having racing thoughts, which would be like very quickly jumping from really unrelated thoughts to another?
Yeah, exactly. And I think you see that in like psychosis too. Like people will, it'll, from us as an external observer, it looks like the person is just completely, but to them, I'm sure it makes sense, right? Like they're like, oh, this is related to that. And that's, you know, so yeah, I don't know. This is all like very unexplored area. That's one thing I am quite interested in, is looking at how it all relates to like mental illness and stuff like that. So, cause I think at the end of the day, it's nice if your research can be help people and be clinically relevant.
What relationships have you found or are you aware of with mind wandering, like for either type, whether that's dynamic or not, and relationships to like the efficacy of tasks or activities that are being done by individuals? So basically, like a better way of saying that is like, is there situations which it seems like mind wandering is actually turns out to be beneficial to what people are actively trying to do, and other situations where it's like obvious that mind wandering is causing people to have a lower performance level? Like I thought of this honestly because when you brought up driving, right? And I think that's like an awesome example. I totally relate to that. When I'm driving, like oftentimes I'll start like, you know, daydreaming about other stuff, whether it's dinosaurs or jets or whatever it might be. But you know, at the same time, it's like, you know, driving can be a really dangerous task and involves a lot of like fine, you know, movements and the input of data and senses and all this kind of stuff. And it would seem like, you know, if my mind is wandering too far, it would actually cause me to potentially not, you know, put myself or others in a dangerous situation. But then on the flip side of that, I'm also like aware, and maybe you could say more about this or familiar with like the kind of like flow state idea, where you're like so into what you're doing that you like actively kind of like forget that you're doing it and just operate automatically at your like best level.
Yeah, totally. That's a good kind of thing to think of. I guess you could think of flow as being sort of antithetical to mind wandering, just because you're so immersed in what you're doing. I know there's some researchers that look at how flow relates to mind wandering. It's interesting because I think, that's something I don't know that much about, but that's certainly an area I would like to look at. Because, yeah, flow is what it's all about. Like any peak experience that you have, I think, is generally the result of being like immersed in what you're doing. And I do kind of wonder if that's why task unrelated thought is associated with negative affect, because it is kind of the opposite, right? Like you're not engaged in what you're doing. But like anytime like you're really focused on the conversation that you're having and you lose your sense of self consciousness and you sort of become one with that's kind of what it's all about. And then your other question was about,
it was just kind of related to like, does it seem like mind wandering is more of a hindrance to being like effectively doing tasks, or is it is it actually turned to be kind of beneficial?
Right. Yeah. That's, the whole idea of like, when is mind wandering helpful and when is it a hindrance? That's a super important and interesting area. There's actually people are working on research to create technology that can allow you, the technology can monitor your like physiology, like your eye movement and your brain active, like your EEG. You can have like wearable, portable EEG that registers brain activity. And the idea is they're trying to detect when your mind is wandering so that they can, so the technology can like bring you back on task. But the idea is it could be context sensitive. So maybe there's task relevant freely moving thought. That's something that people sometimes forget about. Like brainstorming would be an example of, so that might be a type of mind wandering that you want to do, right? So the system can know that. I mean, this technology is far in the future, but yeah, I think it is relevant like it's dependent on what you're doing. Like, and yeah, driving, I don't know that much about the literature on driving, although that's barely been a movement. I think as VR technology becomes more like accessible, as it becomes cheaper, I think people are incorporating that more into the lab, and then you can do VR. People can be like driving in virtual reality, and then periodically you can ask them if their mind is wandering. So there's research around that. But I do know that there's this finding that people tend to get into car accidents when they're closer to their home, and I think it's because the more they're like, oh, I understand what's going on, and their mind is able to wander more. Would be my guess for how to interpret that finding. But yeah, like knowing the costs and benefits of mind wandering, when is it helpful, when is it not, like that's super important to human flourishing, I think. And yeah, I feel like we've only kind of started to scratch the surface on that whole thing. Because yeah, it can be super beneficial, so.
And not that it's like, as you said, like the human flourishing, it doesn't seem like something we could ever like get rid of, but it also seems that something that's like quite distinctly human and like a very much a part of our like how our minds work and what makes our the kind of thinking that we do like unique, or like, you know, I mean maybe I'm wrong. I don't, obviously this like how would we this is the old like Thomas Nagel probably like, what would it be like to be a different kind of animal, a different kind of mind? Obviously we don't know that kind of thing, but I don't know. Or I would think that most animals or other minds that we're aware of, other types of minds, like don't do the same sort of like daydreaming process or mind wandering process that we do, especially in that kind of like dynamic way. Although maybe I'm wrong as I say that, like maybe, but again, it's gonna be a very hard thing to like assess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can't ask them. You can't ask them what their mind is doing. Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like we're always trying to find these different things that make us uniquely human. And it seems like what ends up happening is people think that they found it, and then they realize other animals do it too. Like they're like, oh, economy. Only human beings have an economy. It was like, oh, there's like these cleaner fish that I think have this like crazy bartering system where something, I forget. Yeah, so it's like, well, they have, and then it's like, well, I mean, I guess you could point to language, but then even like other animals have pretty sophisticated forms of communication, but people are like, oh, but human beings have this. And so yeah, mind wandering might end up being one of those things. Like I know that if you have a rat navigate a maze, you can watch what happens in their hippocampus, which is like this area that does like spatial representation. And you look at the way that it activates while they're running through the maze. When they then later sleep, you can see their brain activating this. You can see this hippocampus activating the same way, but backwards. So it's like it's replaying the maze activity backwards because it's consolidating that memory. So it might be that's like, I mean, that's dreaming, probably. So maybe they do that while they're awake. I don't know.
Do you think we consolidate memories when we do mind wandering? Because I feel like I think you've brought up this distinction between daydreaming and mind wandering, and I think that's good to bear in mind. But I wonder if that's, because that seems to be one of the like popularly understood purposes of dreaming, is kind of like it's an artifact of like memory consolidation and sleep. Do we do something like that when our mind is wandering?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's certainly a debate about why mind wandering happens, and similarly there's a debate about why we dream too. But there is a lot of parallels between I guess you could say daydreaming and night dreaming. So yeah, that's a really interesting avenue to go down, because it might be that if we understand why we dream, maybe we'll have a better idea why our minds wander. And yeah, certainly I think dreaming is related to memory consolidation. So it could be that there's something like that going on with mind wandering. I mean, one thing that I think they have found is that when